It is time for the Board of News Roundup. Friday mornings, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger. Marshall's the editor and publisher of The Timberjay. It's a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall, thanks for being with us today.
Happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, let's talk about one of the big stories you've been reporting on about the city of Tower and their ambulance service, emergency services. What were they and what are they changing to?
Sure. Well, I mean, for years, this Tower ambulance service has been like a lot of small-town ambulances, run primarily by volunteers. I mean, over the years, they went from being, you know, kind of purely volunteer to starting to get paid a little bit for their time, you know, as they run out on calls or whatever, you know, because people realized that they were having to give up time at work and things, so it made sense. But now they're looking at going to an entirely new system where they would have paid on-call staff 24 hours a day. They're looking at having the service staff, like I said, 24 hours a day from Monday through Friday. They plan to continue to staff with volunteers on the weekend. You know, they figure that there's more availability from folks on the weekend. But during the week, they would have these on-call people. Now, they wouldn't necessarily be at the hall the whole time, but they could be. But they need to be within, you know, like 5 minutes in terms of response time should there be a call. And this is obviously going to add a lot of payroll cost to the service and the city. In fact, looks like it'll be about $165,000 a year in additional payroll, and that's a very significant number for the city of Tower. You know, their payroll currently is not much more than that, so we're probably looking at doubling their payroll. And then there'll be other expenses as well. But according to their ambulance director, all of this will be paid for by service being able to handle more transfers of patients between hospitals. This has become quite common, apparently, that hospitals need to have patients transferred, you know, between various facilities. You know, the Ely Hospital, which maybe is a primary care facility, you know, might have a patient who needs a higher level of care, and they might need to get transferred down to Duluth, for example. And that would be a transfer that, you know, the Tower Ambulance Service could potentially provide. And in doing so, they make a considerable amount of money. Really amazed to hear at the rates that these ambulance services are now getting for these transfers. I mean, just to go from Ely to Duluth, it's about a $2,500 transfer fee. Just to go from Virginia to Duluth would be about $2,000. So it's quite lucrative, and according to the ambulance director, if they can do about 3 transfers a week additional, he figures they will be able to pay for having all these folks there on call 24 hours a day. So it remains to be seen, I guess, whether they'll be able to get that many additional transfers. They've already done, you know, they've been doing transfers for years, but, you know, with volunteers. But because they can't always get volunteers, he said they do miss quite a few transfers that they could otherwise do. So he's assuming that just by being able to handle additional transfers, they will be able to make this pay. And there are advantages. Obviously, if you have people on call all the time, or certainly more regularly, you'll be having quicker response time for medical calls as well. And certainly there's an advantage in that. And, you know, and also providing some employment, of course, for folks. You know, there's certainly an advantage there. I guess it still remains to be seen whether this is going to work out. I guess if it doesn't, they could always discontinue it. And we'll be watching the rollout of this quite closely. And it was interesting. It really happened fast. First started really hearing about this in April, and the council gave the green light, and now they're advertising for new staff, and they plan to have this thing in effect July 1, which is pretty quick, and we'll see how it goes.
All right, keep us posted on that story, and possibly something that may be happening in other towns?
Well, absolutely. In fact, we've been hearing that other towns have kind of figured out that there is a lot of money in these transfers, and that others are looking at ramping up their paid on-call staff as well, or going to a paid on-call system. Whether or not, you know, my thinking here is if, as more communities do this and more services are doing this, there's going to be probably more competition to get these transfers. It could drive the price down, you would assume, if you have more supply than demand. My guess is that some of these will find out that it's not so lucrative in the end, and they're not able to get as many transfers as they might think, because everybody's going to be vying for these things.
Well, we'll move on to another story you've been covering, Marshall. It's Memorial Day weekend is one of the big first official weekends where people come north to spend time. And there's a new campground, but it's not quite open yet, right, at the new state park?
That's right. This is the new Lake Vermilion Sedan Underground Mine State Park, which is always a mouthful, I have to say. But that's the official name for it. And they have been in building this new campground for, oh gosh, about a year and a half. And it's really basically complete. They have to test their water system, which, according to the park manager, they could probably do in, you know, a few days just to make sure everything's operating the way it should. But for whatever reason, the DNR has decided not to open it yet. They want to have a kiosk, an information kiosk, which they're currently building about a mile into the park on the main access road. And I guess some DNR officials decided that this made sense to build this kiosk because they were worried that it's quite a long ways from when you enter the park to where the campground is, and they were worried that people would think they were getting lost. So they decided they better put a sort of a contact station of some kind or an information center so people could stop in and pick up some information, maps and whatnot, just to assure themselves that they're on the right road. And makes sense. And they're in the process of building this. Like I said, they should have it done by the end of June. And then park officials are hoping that they can open the campground shortly after that. Right now, they're saying probably mid-July, but, you know, could be a little bit later, depending on how things go. They also wanted to get some wayfaring signs up. Those are supposed to be manufactured and installed here sometime in June, but that's the hope anyway. They don't have a firm date on that at this point. So a few things yet to put in place before they officially open. And I know the park manager, Jim Essig, he's a little bit frustrated, I think, said they've been kind of getting pounded by the public, people calling, wanting to know when the campground's going to be open. Obviously, it's camping season, and people have been hearing about it and anticipating being able to come there and camp. And it is a nice campground, I have to say. I think people are going to be very pleased with it. It's just a question of when are they going to open the doors. And he's kind of frustrated. He said he'd sure like to be able to open it sooner, but still going to have to wait here another several weeks. So unfortunately, we're going to miss a good chunk of summer at that campground, which is a little disappointing.
That's Marshall Helmberger. This is the Board of News Roundup on the Friday morning show. Marshall, another big story. Exploratory committee opened up for the 8th District seat. Who is considering running for that?
Well, her name is Sue Hakes, and she's a former county commissioner, and she was also Grand Marais mayor, so from the very far tip of the Arrowhead. I'm assuming she doesn't say, but I'm assuming she's a Democrat just based on her press release. And, you know, the previous positions she's held are not partisan, per se. You know, so she's never run as a DFLer in the past. But just based on her comments, it's quite clear that she's very opposed to the Republican agenda and the Trump administration's agenda at this point, and she wants to go to Washington to fight for more progressive priorities, I guess. Of course, it's unusual for a DFLer to think about exploring a bid at this point, given that Representative Rick Nolan is still the sitting representative from the 8th District. But, of course, Nolan has not indicated at this point whether he intends to seek re-election in 2018, and he's also currently considering a possible run for governor instead. So I think Hakes was just kind of throwing her hat, you know, tentatively in the ring. I'm assuming if Nolan decided to run for re-election, she probably would withdraw her bid. But it remains to be seen. I mean, there are some people unhappy with Nolan as well. So it's possible there could be a primary challenge, but I would say that's unlikely. But in either case, she's getting out there out front. And I'm sure if Nolan doesn't seek re-election, there's going to be a lot of hats thrown in the ring for his position. I think that's a safe bet here moving forward.
And have you heard anything on who might be the Republican running?
No, but, you know, a lot of times we don't hear that much until, you know, on the Republican side, until it gets a little bit closer. Nobody has announced at this point, at least that we've seen.
Okay, that's Marshall Helmberger, the Border News Roundup. You can read more at their website, timberj.com. Marshall, have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, Heidi.